Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I know that I want to give a special shout out to two of my listeners who I know are listening in today. Kanisha, I know you have taken an early lunch, so you won't miss this interview. And then, of course, Danzy, I know you have this on in your lab and while you're doing microsurgery there. So be careful. And I am so happy because I know that you are all eager for me to interview Nikki Drayden. I'm just so excited about it. Nikki, are you there?
Here.
Oh, well, Nikki is... As my listeners know, because I mention you quite often, you are just a fantastic author. I was so, so happy when your first book came out, The Prey of Gods. And so I was eagerly awaiting the second book, which is called Temper. And whoo, I was so happy. You know, the nice thing about having a radio program, I get the book months before everybody else. So how are you, Nikki?
I am doing good. I am kind of a seasoned author now, I think, with a year of experience under my belt. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know. When I first talked to you, you were like just starting out and you didn't know everything that was going to happen to you. And of course, it's been an exciting year and that you just came out with this new book, which is fabulous.
And thank you very much.
There's so many things we have to talk about, but I do want to tell everyone that I discovered Nikki's writing because of her short stories, and we're going to talk about them. And since then, I have every time I see a cheesecake, I think of Nikki, and we will tell people about that in a little while. But first, let's talk about Temper. Temper is, woo! It is a different book. You know, of course, we know that you are a little bit out there. And
thank you. I think that was a compliment.
Yeah, it is. It's a great compliment because, you know, you have been compared to, you know, some really, really great writers, but I don't think anybody quite compares to you. You are one twisted, wacky person.
Okay, thank you.
I'm thinking of that. What's in your head? You know, it's like popcorn popping all over the place. You have so many ideas. And this in the new book, of course, you create an entire world. And where you get all these ideas, I don't know. But it's fun for the reader.
Well, that's what I was aiming for, something that's fun, and you're able to kind of immerse yourself in this world that's a lot different from ours.
Definitely. Well, when we're talking about world building, you really have created a world that it's unexpected. There are so many interesting things that you've put into this book, and we'll just start by telling people that it is a book set in... sort of a South Africa that doesn't exist exactly, but it's a wonderful world where, well, I'm not sure I say the word wonderful, but anyways, it's a world where virtues and vices are traits that are, you know, split between twins. So explain how you got the idea and tell us more about this world that you've created in Temper.
Okay, so kind of what, like, the original ideas that kind of came to me when I wanted to write this second book, and I kind of wanted it to feel a little bit similar thematically to The Prey of Gods, but kind of make it where The Prey of Gods was kind of like a utopia. I kind of wanted to go the opposite direction and make this just kind of a really dark, dark place with a little bit of hope, but mostly just something where you were glad you didn't live there. And so kind of the first idea came to me was that I just wanted to depict an African continent that hadn't been like tainted by, you know, the ills of colonization. And so that was kind of almost kind of like an alternate history, but not quite, because we have a lot of fantasy elements as well. And one of those also comes from there's like some regions of Nigeria, they have this really like high twinning rate. Like one in 10 people are like a twin. And so I'm like, well, that's really interesting. But how about we, like, you know, pump that up to like 90 or 99% of people have a twin. And so and that's kind of where I went with this world. Well, pretty much everyone has a twin. And to top that off, like people, it's kind of like the good twin, bad twin scenario, except for the good twins and bad twins are distinguishable because everyone gets, there's like seven vices and virtues that are split between the, each pair of twins. And so since there's an odd number, like one twin will always have more vices than the other twin. And so the twin with the most vices is kind of considered the bad twin. And those vices are branded down their arms so everyone in the world can see it. And it kind of shapes their future as far as what kind of, you know, resources and what, you know, jobs are going to be available to them. And so that's kind of the basic premise. And then there's more like layers of magic and fantasy layered on top of that. So it's kind of a lot, but I really enjoyed putting it all together.
Layers is an understatement. there's so much in this book, but you've done a brilliant job. You know, it is not easy. First of all, the story is told from Aubyn's point of view.
Right.
And it's always when you have one point of view like that, that it's a tricky thing. You in the first chapter, we're not sure if we're going to like Aubyn or not, because he is the lesser twin, if we, you know. And you know how you make us get into his world and see things through his eyes. And meanwhile, all the time you are laying down little hints of what's going to happen in the story. You did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you very much. That was two of my biggest challenges was going into this, that I wanted to tell the story from the bad twin's point of view. So the challenge there was to find a way to make him relatable enough to the reader so that they just wouldn't hate him and like throw the book across the room. And I mean, he has his redeeming moments, I think. And he's, you know, everybody at their heart thinks they're a good person. So, but also like trying to tell this story that I have like so much world building going on, but to tell it from one point of view, and that point of view is someone who's young. He's about 17. And he has a very narrow worldview just from where he was raised. And so trying to like build this entire world around this 17-year-old who sees it and has his own like prejudices and ways of viewing things, it just was a really big challenge. But I always like a challenge.
Well, you have a complex family background for him, for the twins. And the way you write, one feels that like you actually know these people.
You definitely get to know them. And I think a lot of that comes out just in writing and doing what feels right for the story. Because this outline I didn't outline. So it was just really kind of like self-discovery and discovering these characters and how they ended up this way. And so like some of the scenes, there's a lot of family drama in this. So if you like family drama, this might be up your alley. Just writing, there's a dinner scene in the second chapter where like kind of all of these egos are stuffed into this room because everyone kind of, you know, thinks they're the most important and like have their opinions about stuff. And so you have all these people sitting around a table and, you know, on top of the normal family drama that, you know, we all have during holiday season, like there's also like magic drama and like family secrets and there's the very real threat that people will be possessed by a demon because demons exist in this world and they particularly like to, you know, affect people when it gets colder outside, the temptations are higher. And so people kind of combat this by, they have like religious rituals where they'll burn like cinnamon scented candles to ward off the demons and then kind of keep an eye on each other and have like these feasts so like family stays close. And so that's just always setting up a lot of potential for family drama. and which I think kind of reflects, you know, the bigger worldview of like how people and the families don't get together. How can you expect, you know, this whole society to be able to get to get along together?
Well, this is really high octane sibling rivalry. oh boy, when you shine a light on sibling rivalry, you really do it. It's amazing. Now, you know, as I said, it's the way you've created so many levels and so many interesting things that when we're talking about a page turner, this is a page turner because we are drawn into this world, and you're just so clever. After I read it the first time, I went back and I said, where does she come out with all these ideas? And whether it's how do you say it? Gata Damosi?
Oh, yeah, Gata Damosi. Gabatamosi.
Yes. Yeah, prep. And, and of course, the religion of grace and icy blue. And so just tell us about some of these special things that you developed here.
Okay. So, like, one of the fun things about being authors, you can pretty much do whatever you want. And so, like, I like exploring, like, themes about religion and science. And so I had the pleasure of creating my own, like, folklore for this novel. And there are two deities because, you know, everyone's a twin. So it made sense that there would be two of them. And there's Grace and Icy Blue. And so... and Grace, obviously, like, the better, and Icy Blue is kind of, like, the demonic person. And so, and, you know, it's just putting all those things together and then kind of seeing how people, like, how you have to think of how do people celebrate, you know, how do people celebrate their religion, how do people attend a church, and so they attend sanctuaries, and what other, like, spiritual involvements do they have? So there's these things called deathing sticks, and they kind of look like chopsticks, except for they have, like, inscriptions on the side of different letters. And however, you try to, like, build them, like, kind of like little, I don't know, what do you call those tinker toys?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the name of them. You try to build them together, and then, like, however they stack up, you can read special messages from Grace. And so people, like, participate in all these different types of ways to interact with these entities that are very real in their lives. And so it was just kind of interesting to come up with thoughts. And usually for me, it's just like when I'm writing, just weird stuff comes out of my head. So I think I view that as kind of a gift. So my muse is very strong. So I'll say something like dusting sticks somewhere, and I don't even know what that means, like, when I'm writing it. Like, just the words will come out. And then I'll have to think, well, what does that word mean? And how do people use that word to connect with their religion? And so
you came out with it. And at the same time, you know, that would be a great product. You can sell that on your website.
That definitely would.
You know, because authors look for things that, you know, they can sell that relate to their books. And other than a mug and a T-shirt, here's you have a perfect product. You'll have everybody going, right?
Definitely, yeah. That's cool.
So I think that's terrific. you know, you have to look from a business point of view, as you've learned in this year, this exciting year since the first book came out. And I know it's been a ride.
definitely. It was definitely easier the first time going around, even though I didn't know what to expect, because, like, I had the one book, and, like, I had that book, I'd had years and years to polish it, because, you know, it takes a while to even get to that point. And so all of a sudden, you're kind of thrust into this, like, lifestyle where, you know, I have another book due, like, while I'm trying to promote this first book, like, I have another book due in less than a year. And so trying to, like, balance all of that and balance, you know, you start going to, like, conventions and, like, book festivals and all of that sort of stuff. So it's been kind of a juggling act where you just have to learn how to, like, multitask and just do the best you can, and sometimes learn how to say no. And also learn how to say yes and do things that you're afraid of, like public speaking. is, I don't know, it's something you have to kind of get used to and like put yourself out there. And when you have opportunities, take them and see how they make you feel. And if you think it's something you could do, do it. And if you don't like it, then you just kind of, you know, find something else that works for you.
But it is a real adventure. And I was so excited that I started reading you before you had your book. I was reading your short stories, and so then I felt like I was in on the birth of a great author. And now Harper Voyager is your publisher, and of course Donald Moss Agency is behind all of this. So
right.
it's wonderful to hear about. The first year, I think you could just write a book the first year in an author's life, because I know that it's all very strange, from coming from just short stories to suddenly be picked up by Donald Moss Agency, which is like one of the top three agencies in New York City. That alone was a great accomplishment, and they are treating you very, very well. I love their the way that Harper sent out wonderful publicity material on you, and really getting people excited about the book.
Yeah, definitely. Because like coming up, you hear like all of these like horror stories about like how the publisher won't promote your book. But like Harper Voyager's been like really amazing. They've just been scrambling behind the scenes, getting the book to like where it needs to be when it needs to be there. And it's just like amazing to have that resource, because you know, if you don't, you're just kind of like left stranded and like not knowing what to do. And you can only like put up so many Twitter posts before like you annoy people. So it's wonderful, just wonderful, amazing to have them like in my corner cheering me on and helping me in ways like I can't even like begin to understand.
Well, they have provided top class. I mean, the very, very best publicity material. They send out all sorts of things that really excite the people who are here to promote your books. I don't get this really from for some of the very, very big authors. And so I've been really impressed at how impressed they must be with you, because they don't do this for everybody. And so
yeah.
I thought, wow, you know, I get amazed just to see your publicity materials. Now, you know, we're going to talk. Let's take a few minutes before I talk about the other things. I do want to, again, go back to Donald Moss. Your agent at Donald Moss is?
Jennifer Jackson. Very amazing and talented and awesome and nice.
Exactly. And I think, you know, sometimes we're so busy always interviewing the authors, and the authors don't get a chance to really say how very, very grateful they are to the agents. And Jennifer's done a great job with you. They've recognized, and Donald Moss, who, you know, he's been on Joy on Paper, and he spots talent. And I know that what they like to do is they like to stay with an author and build their careers. And they're doing that with you. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's definitely nice to have somebody, you know, in your corner that's always going to be in your corner, because you know, publishing changes so fast, and, you know, editors might move to a different, you know, like a different publisher, same up different publisher, or, you know, things happen, but, you know, your agent's going to, you know, always have your back and be in your corner and find other opportunities for you. And they just really, that's why it's important to find an agent that is like a really good fit for you, because you want someone who's really in love with your work and isn't just like looking for a dollar. You want somebody, you know, who believes in you. And, you know, anybody, especially like we were talking about, I went to ArmadilloCon this past weekend, which is our local science fiction and fantasy convention here in Austin. And we were on a panel about, you know, kind of like the publication process. And we were talking about how some people find their editor before, you know, they find an agent. And that's just like one possible way sometimes it happens. And then how you could, you know, pretty much go to any agent and say, here, do you want my money? I have a book deal. And it came up that you don't want just any agent who just wants you just because there's money on the table. You want to find somebody who loves your work and will stick with it. And like, if the offer fell through, would still be committed to, you know, finding another place for your work. So it's just this really a crucial and vital first step of many to get someone who you can always depend on.
And I think we're going to be, I'm going to take a break, but when I come back, I want to talk about another author and get your ideas on that, because I think you'll be interested. But I just have to take a break, so make sure you hold on, okay? And I'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my very, very special guest today, Nikki Drayden, whose new book is called Temper, and I'm so excited to be talking to her about that. She was on last year with her first book called The Prey of Gods, and it's been an exciting year, right, Nikki?
It definitely has.
Now, do you still have your full-time job?
I actually just reduced my hours a little bit more, so I'm trying to keep the job, because it is nice to have benefits.
Oh, yes.
But, yes, so I'm trying to just reduce my hours and just kind of split things 50-50 between writing and my day job.
Yeah, because you used to work a lot of hours on your day job. So if you can cut it but still keep it, because at the end, all that pension stuff and all that stuff adds up, and you don't want to lose it after, because you worked for many years.
Definitely.
But meanwhile, while you're working, your employer should understand that while you're working, her mind was like bubbling over there popping with popcorn and with all these ideas. And I thought when The Prayer of Gods came out, I thought, oh, wow, there, she's got a lot of ideas. I had no idea until this one, because it's so wonderful. And I'm thinking, from a writer's point of view, I think people are, particularly from writers, will really want to reread several times the ending, because you get us to this ending that is, there are so many twists and turns and interesting things happening, but then the ending is very fulfilling. And I look back and I realize how many, you know, you had to plan these hints and these other things well in advance, right?
Well, that's the good thing about being a writer is that you can go back and make yourself look brilliant by, you know, when you figure out the ending and then you go back and put all the hints in. So you don't have to know them beforehand, but that is definitely a way to make yourself look smart.
Well, you certainly do. And you do it seamlessly. So we don't know anything. We're really surprised by some of the twists. But then, of course, you are known for twisted tales and... that's so wonderful. And when The Prayer of Gods came out, I told you then, I said, I'm sure that at some point they're going to make a film of it. I don't know if they've done it yet or you have the deal yet, but you know when you have the deal, you have to tell me because you have to invite me to the premiere because I know I can see it myself in my head.
Okay, I will have seats for you.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, you know, maybe I could even get like a little bit part in there. Maybe a victim or something, I don't know. But, you know, one of the things is Alexandra Bracken was on the program last week and her movie came out, The Darkest Minds, the other day. And, you know, sometimes people will say to me, well, why do you want, you know, you talk about a book being made into a film? And one of the reasons is that if a book is made into a film, it just opens up the market for you, for more people to read your books. Mm-hmm. It's not so much the money. I mean, it's nice to get the money. But the fact is that you find so many more readers who will always be turning to your books. No matter, even if you only have one book made into a movie, it just gives you that reader base that you need.
Right.
So, you know, when you do have an announcement on that one, you have to you have to come here and announce it on Joy on Paper. And it can be it can be like breaking news, you know. I never have breaking news, so they don't, interrupt. They don't interrupt television shows, and they don't interrupt big radio shows to say, Patsy with a Z has breaking news. But if you hold off on that announcement and come here on Joy on Paper, you can announce... maybe two film deals, because I know that they'll make wonderful films. The books just,
I do kind of write visually, so I would love to see that. And Temper has one of the things I like most about it was building a culture that has just this kind of almost an obsession with fashion, and so. One of the things I did was to look at South African Fashion Week and pull each character has this runway model outfit on, and so that was just kind of, I think that was really pretty on a screen to see
I was going to mention that the fashion, there's so many things that you've done here of just coming out with these ideas of what society will be like about you know, the genders and all of this. It's just really cutting edge and fascinating, as you said, very visual. Your stories are very visual.
Well, hopefully readers are able to see it in their minds and just helps them imagine, all those little details and, how food might taste and, the touch of a fabric or, you know, how light reflects off the stained glass. It's just, this little clues that you can just pull your reader closer and closer into where you want them to be.
Now, you know, I the first real sci-fi book that I read, I was very young, and it was Mike Resnick's Kirinyaga, which is also set in Africa. And, okay. You know, it was, it won the Hugo Award and all sorts of awards, Nebula, I think. And he has this love of Africa from his travels there, and he just fell in love with Africa. And so it's really wonderful to see the development of the interest in Africa and the interest of now people of color, because, you know, it's taken some years to get everybody on the idea that there's so much rich culture and things to pull into a story set in Africa. And I particularly love the fashion, by the way. I thought that was great. That's always great. You know, I thought, you have such a, so you know, you you know, you have so many interests. You're with your science, with the religion, with culture. That's why your writing is so good.
Oh, thank you.
So now you had a year. Did you have this story started when you finished The Prayer of Gods? Because you had finished The Prayer of Gods and then you went straight into this story?
So I'd had this story written before Prey of Gods came out. And so most of it was written, but I had to rewrite a big chunk of the ending because I wanted to get that ending, you know, right, because that's just a story. It's an important part to stick the landing because you set up all this amazing stuff and you just really have to, like, nail it at the end. And so I rewrote it once and it still wasn't right, and I rewrote it again. And then I had to tweak it again and tweak it until it was just like I wanted to end on the right note. So well, I think otherwise having, like, if I'd had to write, like, a full novel in a year after, you know, Prey of Gods was out, I think that would have been probably too much. And so I would advise anyone, you know, while you're, you know, shopping your novel around, make sure you're working on another one, because if they ask for another one, it's always great to have that, like, at least mostly ready to give them instead of having to start from scratch.
Exactly. Well, that's how you get multi-book deals, because you if the agent could say, well, you know, she's very prolific. She's already written the next one, and the third one is already in her head, and no problem. We can keep going with this author for years, you know?
Definitely.
Because they're looking for that, too. They don't want, you know, it's and once in a while you get, you know, Killing Mockingbird that, you know, is one book and it lasts forever. And the publisher and agent keep making money forever, but it's better to have a bunch of books sort of in line.
Definitely, yeah. It's nice now noticing the difference, like when I am able to offer people two books. So one might not be, you know, readers might not be interested in one book, but they might, you know, the other one might speak more to them. So the more you have, the more avenues you have for somebody to reach you, and you never know where that's going to go. That goes for short stories as well. Like through you, you know, having read some of my short stories, you were able to come to me that way. So if you have all these little stories sprinkled out, like there's just so many ways for people to reach you.
Let's talk about the short stories. You started publishing the short stories, very little books, with wonderfully weird. Tell us about the series.
Okay, so I started out doing like kind of a self-published, like just little, like usually four or five stories in each volume, called Delightfully Twisted Tales. And that was just a way to publish some of my mostly things that had been published in other places and to put them into a little collection so people could find them mostly on Amazon, just little ebooks. And that's also, you know, a way to find different readers, because not every reader is going to go out to, like, the online magazines to find their fiction. And so, yeah, I think it got a pretty good reception. It's harder these days just because there's so many titles out there that are competing against each other.
Well, it was a combination of the word delightful. I always tell writers, you know, I go to writers meetings and meetings where people want to write, and they'll say, well, I want to write, and I don't know how. I say, well, start with a short story. So I was looking for examples of short stories that people should read. And then I was looking and you know, on my search on Amazon, and up came this delightfully, the word delightfully. And I said, well, I have to look at that. And the covers are actually also very twisted looking. I don't know. Who did your covers?
I just threw those together, just trying to make them look as nice as I could.
You did them? Oh, that is, yeah. Well, you got a theme. And I, okay. Boy, oh boy. So I saw the cover. I thought they were delightful. I thought the covers were delightful. So I read the stories, and then, of course, some of them are real. I thought, this girl's really weird. I don't know if I should recommend her or not. And then I got to Low-Cal Cheesecake, and I read that story. And it just, I got so tickled with that story. I couldn't stop. I had to tell everybody about it. I had to make cheesecake that day.
Oh, yum.
And ever since then, whenever I make cheesecake or I see cheesecake in the frozen aisle section, who do I think of? That's, again, here's another great thing. I'm telling you, you have to do a Nikki Drayden cheesecake.
Locale,
so we can see it in the frozen aisle, and we can buy it. I'm telling you, with those delightful covers.
Okay, you
see, one of the things that I do for writers, I always come out with ideas. You're going to have the sticks, and then now you can do a whole thing of frozen cheesecakes. We have to talk to some major manufacturer and get them to do that, because I could see it. I'd head right straight to that section and get a cheesecake.
Okay. Well, that's a cool idea.
But I'm not going to tell anybody why. They have to read the short story, because it is.
Yeah, well, you can print the short story on the back of the box.
Eggs. Like, you got it.
Cool.
See, it's marketing. It's called getting, you know, if Oprah can have a line of, I don't know what she sells, potatoes as... potatoes with cauliflower, which it gives me the creeps, because now that gives me the creeps. I can't stand cauliflower, but a cheesecake is better, if you ask me, than cauliflower.
Definitely.
Okay. Wow. I have to send this idea to somebody. this is too good, and everybody, really, this short story. It's in which of the, well, you can get your the Delightfully Twisted Tales as a collection, right?
Right. There's a collection that has probably six volumes, so it's maybe about 30 stories altogether. I think that's on sale for 99 cents right now.
Oh, wow. People.
Yeah, so that's a good deal for...
People, get out there and get this, because just to read this locale cheesecake story is delightful, I'm telling you. And then we're going to be looking forward to seeing... You will be the first author, I think, who will have her own frozen food line. Wouldn't it be fun? I'm telling you, I think you have a future here, if not in writing, at least in frozen food, right?
Definitely.
Because I think you are delightful, and I've right from the beginning, I said, well, anybody who just has this feeling and of joy that I got in reading your stories, and I thought, well, this is a special author, and I was so thrilled to find out that you know what a hammock is, and then you actually read books too. So tell us a little bit more about how you started writing.
So I'm kind of the thought now that everyone has a story within them, and it just needs to, you know, find a way to come out. And so how I came to writing was I hadn't really written too much. I kind of dabbled, you know, a little bit when I was younger. But I saw on the news, they did like a segment on National Novel Writing Month, where you write, you know, 30 or 50,000 words in 30 days in November. And I thought, you know, I like challenges. And I'm like, that sounds kind of cool. Like, why not? But by the time I heard about it was like 3 days left in November. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'll just wait till next November. But like the idea just like sat with me like so hard. I'm like, I cannot wait, you know, a whole year. And so sometime around April, I'm like, I'm just going to do it in April. You know, I do it by myself and see how it goes. And I ended up writing my first novel, which is a chalk novel, but it was still very important because it's one of the novels in the process to get to where I am. But I wrote it in like 25 days, like 50,000 words. And it was just such an amazing feeling to be able to, you know, show that I did this thing to people, and people thought it was good. And so it's just kind of that feeling I want to like share with as many people as I can possible. So, like, I always encourage people to, you know, try National Novel Writing Month, and it might not be your thing. You might not get, you know, 50,000 words, but if you get 20,000 words, it's 20,000 more words than you had when you started. It's nothing to be ashamed about. And if it doesn't work for you as a method, then try something else. I just went for a talk the other day to a preschool. So, you know, anyone can start. And I talked to them about, you know, what it means, what, you know, I showed them a book and like, this is the title of the book and the cover of the book and the author, and you can also be an author. And I had them do like a little writing exercise, and they were just so tickled, you know, be able to create their own stories. And so I don't think, you know, any age, anybody can do it. And it's just really, can be a really fulfilling thing.
Well, that's what I recognized in your writing. I felt this enthusiasm. And the important thing is, you know, like for NaNoWriMo, which is the novel writing month of November, whether you do an official one or you do it in April or right now, it's August. It's August already. My goodness, how did it get to be August? Yikes. Yeah, I was waiting for August just to talk to you, and it's already August. So, well, I don't know. We have 23 days left in August, or 24 days. People, get out there. You can write, you know, 24 days, 1,000 words a day. You could have 24,000 by the end of the month, and then you'll feel really good. Don't you feel really good to see that, your words on paper?
Yeah, just to see your word count building, it's just really cool. It's like, how many words do I have now? Yeah, because it stacks up. Even if you add one word, it stacks up. So, yeah, definitely.
Now, one of the things that I always tell people, as you said, there is a story in everybody, and it doesn't matter what type of story. You might write a story about your family. You might write a kid's book. I always encourage vets who are having problems with just life in general, that you might want to actually sit down and write a story. And certainly nothing to do with the war, nothing to do with what you went through, but to write even a cookbook, to write a children's book, to try to share something wonderful in your life, it makes your life so much richer.
Definitely. I agree. And I think that just for humans, it's just amazing how important story is for us, if you think about it, because it's like, you know, probably want like third on the basic needs. You need food and water, and you need each story before even shelter, because, you know, a story can get you where you need to be to find that shelter, to find that food. It's just something we gravitate to in all its different forms.
And then to be aware of everything around you, of people, to notice how they talk, things, and or even you're driving down the road and you notice a nail polishing shop, right?
Yeah, that's how, just to take inspiration from where you can get it. So, yeah, just one of my characters for The Prey of Gods came from when I was driving around and saw a nail salon called Magic Nails. And you think, well, what if there were magic? And what if they did give magic manicures? And who would we give them these manicures? And it just kind of, take these ideas and like have a place where you can write them, whether it's like in a little physical book or a file on your computer, and just kind of save them up. And then eventually they all kind of come together and form something wonderful.
Well, again, another reason why I think of you every once in a while, because I notice the names now of nail shops that I never paid attention to. But there was this very heartwarming story today about a young woman in Walmart, and she heard about a lady in the store who could not get a manicure at the next door manicure place because her hands were shaking and the people there refused to do her nails. And so this girl in Walmart, just a cashier, she took this lady over to a sitting area there in the store, and she said, "I'll do your nails." And I thought, wow, that's so wonderful. You know, it's just little stories like that, if you pay attention, that can make a book. You could just start with one little thing like that, magic nails, and next thing you know, you let your mind go. And I don't know if everybody has as much popcorn in their head as you do, but yeah, you're doing really, really an excellent job on bringing it out and sharing these stories with people.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, now you're working on the third book already.
I am. I actually just turned in the first draft to my editor last month. So I'm just eager to see what he thinks about it. And it's a little bit of a departure because not only are we getting away from South Africa, we're getting away from Earth altogether. And it's going to be kind of a space opera, probably with an emphasis on the opera part because it's very dramatic, as you know, I like to do.
Well, yes, as I was thinking that if you can build a country, building a universe for you is absolutely no problem. you've got it there. It's just a matter. Orville Redenbacher, watch out because this girl's got all the popcorn in her head. She's bloop, 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 bloop. All over the place. I think so much of it, of course, comes from this ability to observe and to take it all in and to think. And wow, you're amazing. I think you're absolutely amazing, Nikki.
Oh, thank you very much.
And
I appreciate it.
As I said, that one of the joys of life is reading, and to find an author whose works that you really enjoy and that you can get into it's just, it's like a treasure. It's like finding a treasure. And I know that you've been an inspiration also to my goddaughter, who is writing sci-fi now, and I'm so thrilled that she's, you know, just forging ahead, because she also is one of these people with a lot of great ideas and wants to share them with people. And also the social commentary, because you have in this book some deep understanding of culture and of society and the problems in society.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things that science fiction and fantasy are good at looking at, is being able to kind of twist the lens on our own society to kind of reflect those things back in a different manner that just kind of make you think. And hopefully, I like to kind of pose the questions and not necessarily answer them in the text, but hopefully just get readers to kind of think about how people are affected and how people, even like marginalized people, can marginalize other people who don't share that or have a different marginalization. And so, you know, nobody is perfect. And so just trying to find similarities between us instead of trying to focus on dividing by differences, and also celebrating those differences in a way that's, you know, not trying to put anybody down or make a clear division. Like, we have clear divisions in this book.
You know, the interesting thing about your characters is none of them are perfect. They all have, to say the least, they have vices, but they have so many virtues too that do shine through. And as you point out in the book, well, you know, it's important that we look at people and try to see the goodness in them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you were writing the book, were you sort of thinking about all the gender situations, questions in the world at this time, or just came to you, all these ideas?
That was actually just a very fortunate byproduct of how I wanted to structure the novel. So having twins, I wanted them to kind of literally share the same blood. And so, like, when they're in utero, they, you know, their DNA, like, gets swapped back and forth. And some might have just a little bit of swapping, and some might have a lot. And so, but that opened up, you know, they're fraternal twins. So that opened up if, you know, males are swapping with females, if you have, you know, male child and a female child, they're, you know, their sex genes are going to get swapped too. And that's just kind of similar to how, you know, it happens in like other species often. And you end up with these kind of like chimeras that are a mix of different genders and sexes. And once I realized that, I was like, well, I can take this into some interesting directions and kind of explore what, you know, what gender means and,
well,
what sex means.
You know,
and
it's always fortunate when an author comes along that something is sort of cutting edge and in the news too. So there are so many things, wonderful things about this book, and I want people to go to your website. You have a website. It's Nikki Drayden.
I do. It's NikkiDrayden.com.
And they can read more about you there. They can get your books wherever books are sold. And Nikki, I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. As always, it is just so much fun for me to talk to you because I'm a great believer in your talent, and I know that you're going to be on again pretty soon for the third book. And I'm so happy that you're enjoying this process. You deserve it, because anyone who has this, oh, I don't know, there's something special in you. There's a little, just a little sparkle in you that I really admire.
Well, thank you for being a fan and one of the original fans. So I always have a special place for you in my heart as well.
Okay. Well, Nikki, again, thanks so much. And say hi to everyone at Donald Moss Agency, because I think they're a wonderful agents, you know, for you. They've done a great job, and I'm very proud to know them, and I'm very proud to know you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good. Okay. Wow. What a nice young woman. She's was working full time, very very serious type of work and difficult work. And then, wow, all the time she's working, she's thinking about a book, and she did it. She sat down and wrote. And you can do the same thing. Remember that. You know, it's up to you. It doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter how old you are. You can start when you're young. You can start when you're, you know, in your midlife, or you can even start when you're 60 years old. Because I just got a book from somebody who's 68, I think 68, and just wrote a delightful book. I just finished reading it, and I'm going to have her on sometime pretty soon, because she has found that joy in reading. Because, as I said, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to have them spoken on the big screen or even the little screen. And one of those people I know is going to be Carol J. Perry, because I predict that someday soon I will hear that she gets some kind of a deal for her Witch City Mysteries. They are wonderful. If you are looking for cozy mysteries, make sure that you get Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries, because I think one of the channels, I hope Hallmark will pick her up and turn her books into a wonderful and delightful series. And then what else? Oh, all sorts of things are happening. I've got Lisa Unger coming on soon, and Julia Whalen. I am just thrilled with Julia Whalen, one of the best narrators, and now she's written her own book. And so meanwhile, make sure that you say something nice to someone today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so nice to me. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And bye-bye.